Good morning. This is Tracy Hales Fast with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm talking with Robert Westbrook about his latest book in the Howard Moondir Mysteries, Blue Moon. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. I really enjoyed reading Blue Moon and meeting Howard Moondir and the gang.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Okay.
For a while. You had me going there for a while.
Okay. Well, good. You know, I mean, I like to keep, I mean, my goal is to keep readers guessing until the very end and somehow come out with a twist at the very end. And, you know, it's like making a puzzle and making an interesting puzzle,
right.
And also at the same time writing something, having, you know, interesting characters and really kind of an interesting social setting. I mean, my novels, my mysteries tend to take on very social issues of one sort or another. Blue Moon, my latest Howard Moondir book, I took on the whole issue of UFOs in New Mexico.
Right.
This is something, I mean, in other books of the series, I talk about the art community, you know, New Age communities. In the one before Blue Moon, Turquoise Lady, I talk, it's really about the sort of person who comes to New Mexico from the outside in a brand new SUV looking for peace of mind, which is kind of an illusion, not obvious, quite fine. A lot of people are disappointed. I know who come to Taos thinking that, this is going to be a wonderful place, and I'm going to be absolutely happy here. And then they find that the reality of New Mexico is kind of, you know, as we all know who live here, it's a little bit mixed. I mean, it can be, you know, there's some hardships being here, too.
For our listeners, why don't you give a little synopsis of Blue Moon?
All right. I'm going to read two paragraphs that I wrote to try to, you know, be concise. So this is what I, you know, my description of it. Okay.
Okay, great.
Alone on a wilderness trek in the New Mexico mountains, Lakota PI Howard Moondir meets a barefoot, half-crazed astrophysicist who claims he's been abducted by a flying saucer and has just returned from the planet Klizmor, in possession of an elusive equation from their advanced civilization, the theory of everything. Is he a madman or part of a clever fraud? He's not just anyone, Howie soon discovers. He's Dr. Grisha Bloom, a famous Nobel Prize-winning physicist. And when he's murdered, Howie finds himself immersed in a dangerous world of UFO conspiracies, military secrets, and a group of cutthroat astronomers who are competing to claim credit for the discovery of a new subatomic particle, the Blue Moon Quark. That's my little, you know, thumbnail sketch of this
right.
book.
Right, and there's so much in there, the astrophysics and all kinds of really technical stuff. I see that you consulted some people at Alamosa.
I've read quite a few books, first of all. I became interested in this myself. First, I should explain that when I went to college, I was a liberal arts person, and I didn't pay any attention to science at all. This
right.
was in the 1960s, and liberal arts were all into literature and music and this and that. And I really ignored science, and it's only really recently that I realized what a fascinating, I mean, science in 2020 is really the most exciting thing going, I think, probably more than literature. And my wife and I took an astronomy course, a basic astronomy 101 at UNM Taos 2 years ago. And it was given by an astrophysicist from Los Alamos. And it really, I mean, I just found it fascinating. I found it very difficult to actually understand.
Right.
I mean, even though this is astronomy 101, it was, you know, there's a lot of math, and which is not my forte. But anyway, the reading I've done, you know, Stephen Hawking and various things, you know, I thought that I would you know, I could turn this into a book. It's, you know, I mean, a mystery. This is not a physics book or anything
right.
like that. I mean, but use some of these things that I found out. And also combined it, I was actually, a few years ago, I was actually skiing at Taos, mm-hmm. and I was on the chairlift with a guy who turned to me, and he said, you know, in the Four Corners, there's an alien civilization, UFOs that have landed and have a whole underground city.
Oh.
And I looked at him, I thought, my God, is this guy crazy? Is he on drugs? But we were on the chairlift together, you know, hovering 30 feet above the air. And, you know, I kind of, you're kind of stuck for a conversation
right.
like that. You know, and he really believed it. He described this underground city of UFOs, of alien civilization that he claimed to have seen. And, you know, I thought, God, this is really interesting that he believes this. I mean, I don't believe it. I don't know how he came across this, or if he totally made it up, or he thought he saw it. But, you know, there are a lot of people who do believe in UFOs,
mm-hmm.
and I certainly believe it's possible. I mean, I'm not discounting the fact that,
right.
you know, in Roswell. Well, I mean, some of these famous cases, like UFOs in Roswell in the 1940s, and there's one in Aztec, New Mexico. I mean, most of them have been pretty much disproved as either frauds or, you know, weather balloons or various things like that. But, you know, I'm not discounting it, but the whole question of it, I tend, in my books, to think about questions of various things that I'm interested in the time and kind of figure out a plot and turn them into a mystery novel, you know. So that's why I did Blue Moon.
I really like the way you've combined those elements, the Southwest and then the Ard Lakota, Private Eye, and this astrophysics.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed writing that book a lot.
Yeah.
I'm writing a new one now, and I'm keeping. You know, I'm going. I got to kind of keep. You know, they're selling fairly well, and as long as people seem to like them, and you know, I'll sort of keep on writing.
Right.
It's actually, tell the truth, in the pandemic right now, when a lot of different kinds of, you know, careers are shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all my musician friends and performers, you know, they're out of business. But actually, as a writer, I mean, I just kind of stay home anyway, you know.
Right.
so it's not a bad time to be a writer, although it's certainly a strange time. Hungry Ghost,
mm-hmm.
yes. And this, after doing this rather kind of fantastical thing with flying saucers and blue moon quarks and this and that, I've gone back to really more of a classic mystery. It's a family drama. A group of people gather for Thanksgiving in a remote New Mexico ranch, and Howie is there, and someone gets murdered at night, you know, which is kind of
mm-hmm.
like a, you know, almost a classic British, you know, formula.
Right.
But I wanted to do a real family drama that has that the whole plot is driven by personal relationships. And I'm finishing up a second draft of that right now, and probably will turn it into my publisher in about a month.
Is the Moon Deer series the only thing you're working on now? I know you also have The Torch Singer and The Left-Handed Policeman. Are those finished?
I might do more with The Torch Singer. I grew up in Hollywood in the 19, I was born in 1945, and I saw really the tail end of, I guess, what you might call the golden era of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a Hollywood columnist. She was a writer, but she was quite important in her day. And, you know, I knew people. I met people like Marilyn Monroe and John Wayne. And the mother of my best friend was Dorothy L'Amour. So I kind of, you know, I saw this, and I tried to kind of setting these books. There are two Torch Singer books. It's kind of the rise and fall of a singer, a kind of a bee singer who kind of makes, you know, who kind of survives by her wits and her beauty, and is always one step ahead of disaster. So she has to keep figuring out how to save herself. And I've had fun with that book. And I might do another of that series. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
at this point, you know, I'm 74 years old, and I'm kind of trying to gauge what I want to write. The Left-Handed Policeman books were I wrote in the 1980s. My first book, I've been writing for quite a while. My first novel I wrote when I was 23 was called The Magic Garden of Stanley Sweetheart. It was a very 60s, kind of late 1960s novel about a student at Columbia University, where I was an undergraduate, and that was made into a movie. Don Johnson. His very first. He was 18 years old, and it was his first movie. And wow. It wasn't a very good movie. I mean, I didn't think. Of all people, Andy Warhol loved this movie.
Oh.
And he called it the best movie about the counterculture in 1960s. But Andy, who I met a couple of times, was a little bit weird, you know.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
I'm not quite sure he got that right. But
still.
Anyway, so I've been kind of writing on and off for my whole life, and with some long break doing different things.
Why don't you read a little bit from Blue Moon for us?
Okay, I will do. Okay, I've kind of condensed a bit near the beginning,
okay.
Where the book starts out with Howie. His girlfriend has broken up with him, and he's really unhappy. So he takes a 4-day camping trip. He hikes up a mountain I call it Mount Dawson. I make up some of the geography in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having a great time, actually, a sunny day. But then, as it often happens in New Mexico in the summer, a thunderstorm comes up quickly, and he's at 12,000 feet in this, you know, horrible thunderstorm, and he's about to set up his tent to stay dry, this is how it starts.
Okay.
The tent billowed and blew as he worked to get everything in its proper place. He didn't bother with pounding the stakes into the ground. He figured his own body weight would keep him from blowing away. As soon as he had the rain flap attached, he tossed his pack inside and zipped the door closed. He was walking a few feet off with the intention of a final pee when a flash of lightning lit the meadow with intense clarity. Howie cried out in astonishment. In the flash of light, he saw a figure, an old man, walking into the clearing. He was ragged and barefoot and bare-chested, dressed in filthy trousers and no shirt. He had long white hair that was slick from the rain, plastered close to his head. The lightning flashed again, a jagged bolt that seemed to burst upward from the summit of Dawson Peak. The old man drifted closer, a ghostly silhouette with the mountain lit behind him in a corona of fire. Howie had never seen such a ferocious show of nature. He was beyond wet. He was stunned. And the old man kept walking closer. Howie wasn't sure whether to offer help or run for his life. He decided to offer help, but be prepared to run. "Hello," he called cautiously. "Are you lost?" The old man didn't seem entirely real. There was no color to his face. With his long, wet hair, he looked like an Old Testament prophet. He raised a hand. "Greetings," he said. "Are you an earthling?" Howie couldn't think of a decent reply. The rain fell steadily from the cold black sky as Howie and the old man regarded one another. "I say, dear fellow, were you able to get a photograph?" the man asked. For a ragged wraith, more a hallucination than a human being, he was remarkably polite. He spoke with an upper middle class accent Howie associated with the BBC. "A photograph? Of the ship. You saw the ship, didn't you? And that intense burst of light? The flying saucer. You saw it, I hope. The one I came on." "Well, no. But you couldn't miss it, ye gods. It was the size of a football stadium. Impossible to miss. Shaped more like a giant hot dog than a saucer, actually." "No, there was no giant hot dog in the sky," Howie told him firmly. "But there was. How else could I have gotten here?" That was a question Howie was unable to answer. The old man's appearance at Angel Creek Campground was inexplicable. He didn't look good. He was shivering spasmodically. He was a small, frail person, and he didn't appear dangerous, but Howie kept his distance anyway, not taking any chances. I escaped, you see, the man explained. Aha, said Howie. No, please hear me out. The porthole opened, and I ran down the gangplank. Princess Zora helped me get away. What a beautiful girl. Blue eyes, black hair like a raven, a complexion smooth as marble. A shame she wasn't real. Howie sighed. You see, they only take human form to make us feel more comfortable. What they really look like, I can't say. I suspect they don't have bodies at all. Ye gods, the things I've seen. Alpha Centauri. Are you sure you didn't get a photograph of the spacecraft? No one will believe us otherwise. Howie shook his head. But you saw the burst of light. There was lightning. That wasn't lightning. That was them, the old man exclaimed. That was a ship arriving. Ye god, Ben, you don't think that was lightning, did you? Actually, no, that was us emerging from the wormhole. We had to go backward in time to get here. You see, that's the secret. Time has no specific direction. The old man was getting more and more excited. You see, Einstein only got it partly right. Space-time not only bends, you can go backward or forward in it. Either way, it's all so simple. This was becoming a problem. Howie had no idea what he was going to do with a half-naked lunatic who had appeared out of nowhere at his high mountain campground. At least the rain had slackened, but it was still cold and wet. Look, he said, coming to decision, I'm going to give you some of my dry clothes to wear. They're going to be large on you, but at least you'll be warm. You can sleep in the tent. How very kind, the old man said. Howie shook his head. He didn't feel even slightly kind, but he couldn't see any other option. He couldn't let the old man freeze. He unzipped the tent, got out what he needed for himself, and let the old man crawl inside. He gave the fellow his spare shirt and sweater and retreated back into the cold and wet. Damn, he said, feeling very sorry for himself. Howie took his pack and flashlight and arranged himself against the trunk of a tree beneath his rain poncho, dressed in every piece of warm clothing he hadn't given away. This was no longer the camping trip of his dreams, but at least the rain had stopped, the sky was clearing, and the storm seemed to have passed. Overhead, a star twinkled through a break in the trees, laughing at him. I think that's chapter two. I kind of condensed it a little bit. This is when Howie meets the astrophysicist, who's later found murdered.
Yeah, that's a hook.
Yeah, oh, good, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was pretty good. You know, I tend to think of these beginnings, and then the hard part often of writing a novel is how to develop it. Once you have an idea, you know, a start like that, you know, where does it go? And that's usually where I end up putting, most of my heavy thinking.
Right.
And a lot of trial and error, because sometimes, you know, you'll go off in one direction, and at least I will, and
right.
I find, oh, no, that doesn't work, so I have to try something else.
So you are a, what they call a pantser, then.
I'm sorry, I don't really know that term.
Yeah,
what do you mean by that?
Authors are of a couple of different kinds. One is the plotter, who writes an outline first, and the other's the pantser, who kind of writes by the seat of his pants.
Oh, yes, gotcha. Yes, yes, I am. I've actually taught story structure, and I try to teach myself, because that isn't really my strong point. I like, you know, characters and scenes and kind of, you know, I think I myself as a bit of a comedian, you know, I'm a humorist, really, in some ways. But so I try to think of one interesting scene after the other and just kind of keep going. And then when I finish the first draft, then I kind of look back and try to see how I can actually turn the thing into a novel. You know?
Right.
Then I'll see what I have to do to give it some structure.
Yeah, I can see the humor. There is a serious book, and it has a great solid plot, but there's moments of humor. You have to laugh at Howie sometimes.
Yes. No, I think of him as a comic everyman.
Right.
You know.
And his partner, Jack, who's a blind private eye, is an interesting character.
He's an ex-policeman. He was a highly placed commander in the San Francisco Police Department who lost his eyesight in a police operation gone wrong. And he wasn't really ready to retire, but he didn't. They moved to New Mexico, and he decided to set up a private eye agency and he knew he couldn't do it on his own, being blind. So, and Howie is kind of his eyes. Jack is the brain of the outfit, really, and Howie is the one who goes about doing things because he can.
And then, of course, the dog Katcha, his seeing eye dog, is a great character too. You've done that really well. Do you have pets?
I'm actually a cat person. I've had dogs in my life, I've read up on guide dogs, and I really like dogs that especially that working dogs. I've seen in Spain and Greece dogs shepherding sheep. Amazingly running around and keeping a whole flock of sheep working. And then in the Taos Ski Valley, where I've worked at different times, the avalanche dogs are amazing.
Oh.
You know, these dogs, they ride the chairlifts, they find people who are buried under the snow, and they're so highly trained. So Katya is a very highly trained guide dog, and these dogs receive years of training before they're paired with a blind person. And that's what really kind of, I like. I enjoy writing about Katya. She's so smart.
She is. She's a great character. I can tell that there was backstory before this and that these characters are strong and will continue on. So when you went to the class, was it astrophysics class?
Well, it was called Astronomy 101, actually. I mean, it was really first-year college astronomy, yes.
Was that what gave you the idea for Blue Moon?
Well, yes, it kind of came out of that. I mean, I was just interested in astronomy. I mean, I really, one thing about New Mexico, I mean, we really have the stars here. I mean,
right.
I love the clear nights where you can look up and just see, amazing sights. So I just always been kind of fascinated by that, and I wanted to, so that's why I took the course. And then, the book, these ideas kind of gradually, ideas for books don't come from me all at once, but they kind of emerge a little bit, and so you go, oh, that's kind of interesting. Maybe I could do something with that.
So what came first, Grisha or the Blue Moon Quark?
I think the Blue Moon Quark, really. I thought, to tell the truth, in this case, it was almost the title. I thought of, Blue Moon would just be, it worked in my series. All the books in the series have two words in them. There's Ghost Dancer, Warrior Circle, Red Moon, Ancient Enemy, Turquoise Lady, and Blue Moon. And so it just seemed like it kind of fit in the series. And I thought, a quark. I'm kind of fascinated by quarks. It's such a strange name, really. And these are very, very small subatomic particles. And that are only really, I mean, astronomy, I went to college in the 1960s, and there's been so much that's been learned. Since then, really, the last 20 years, there's just been, the whole field has been upturned, and it's amazing how much has really been discovered in the last 20 years.
Oh yes, and you have the books listed in the back that people can explore the topic further.
Yes, I wanted to put that in. I mean, I've never done that before in one of my books, but since I really did a lot of research, and I find this fascinating, I just wanted to kind of pass on a little bit, kind of get a little bit of a reading list for people. My book is total fiction. There is no Blue Moon Quark. I totally made that up, But, people want to find out, like me, general readers, find out more. I did get a list of a few books to start with.
Right. So you say you've been writing forever, really, and your mother really urged you to be a writer because she was a writer.
Yes. My mother was, besides being a Hollywood columnist, was actually the last girlfriend of F. Scott Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald dropped dead in 1940 in my mother's living room, and they'd been together for 3.5 years. And he taught my mother about writing. My mother's Hollywood columns were not exactly great literature, and to have someone like F. Scott Fitzgerald take an interest in her writing was kind of incredible. But he was he wanted to be a teacher. And he actually would look at my mother's columns and get his pencil out and start slashing around and tell her how to write. And my mother kind of carried on that tradition. I was born 5 years after his death. And she really wanted me to be a writer. And in fact, when I was a teenager, I often, well, there were times, not often, but I actually wrote my mother's column. She would send me out to do interviews, and under her direction, I would actually write these. She had five columns a week. And these days, you know, newspaper columns used to be a lot more important than they are now.
Right.
People, you know, they were the way people got, you know, their information about things. And and columnists were really could be quite important. And so she told me how to, you know, start off with a sentence or two that would really bring the reader in, you know. And of course, this is Hollywood gossip, so it's like, you know, who was Elizabeth Taylor seen with at Ciro's nightclub last night, you know? I mean, it wasn't her husband or whatever, you know. I mean, you start off with something a little bit intriguing to bring the reader in, and then you kind of go on. You know, I'm actually quite grateful for that education that I got. I mean, I'm a little bit different. I mean, most of the writers that I know in Taos are concerned with their, you know, self-expression, which is, you know, right. I've always been concerned with my reader. I mean, how to, express myself and say things I want to say and things I'm interested in, but to always bring the reader along. So I try very much to write page turners, keep people up reading at night.
This does. Starts off with a hook, and it's got a little bit of Hollywood in it also.
Yes, there is, actually, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the book before, Turquoise Lady even has more. The Turquoise Lady concerns a pipeline crossing Indian land, and some Hollywood people get involved to protest this, along with the Indian population too. So yeah, I often bring in a little Hollywood, you know, because this is my background after all.
And like you said, there's the books have issues that you talk about, and Hungry Ghost is about the boarding schools, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's the starting point of it anyway. The Indian boarding schools, which really were rather atrocious places, you know, that Native Americans, the children were taken from their tribes and not allowed to speak their native language. The whole idea at that point was to turn them into, you know, homogenized Americans, and there's often a lot of abuse in these schools. Even Howie, you know, my Lakota Sioux is quite well educated. He got a scholarship to Dartmouth, which was originally Dartmouth College was founded as an Indian school too. With the in his charter was to civilize and bring Christianity to the savages.
Right,
and that was the
kill the Indian, but not the man.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
yes.
it's been fun to talk about this chance to really, you know, pontificate. So this has been great.
And now you have a website at robertwestbrook.com.
Yes, I do. It's there, robertwestbrook.com, and there is a link that you can, if anyone wants to reach me and comment or ask me a question, they can find my email address there. Contact me, and I'll be glad to answer.
Well, I appreciate you writing, your writing, and your time talking with me about these. And that was Robert Westbrook talking about his writing, his latest book, Blue Moon, in the Howard Moondeer series. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE, the information and cultural beacon of the Four Corners.